From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, the vice president and the man who would be vice president square off in Kentucky. Biden and Ryan debate, and with Syria in civil war, U.S. troops on the ground next door in Jordan. Last night in Danville, Kentucky, Joe Biden came out smiling and swinging, saying Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's plans would pummel the middle class.
This is unconscionable. There is no need for this. The middle class got knocked on their heels. The Great Recession crushed them. They need some help now.
Challenger Paul Ryan said the president has had his chance and failed.
President Obama, he had his chance. He made his choices. His economic agenda, more spending, more borrowing, higher taxes, a government takeover of health care. It's not working.
And an understated Defense Secretary Leon Panetta quietly announced that U.S. forces are already on the ground in Jordan, working with Jordanians near the Syrian border and the Syrian civil war.
We've also been working with them to try to develop their own military and operational capabilities in the event of any contingency there.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Todd Purdom from Vanity Fair, Bob Cusack from The Hill, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. Who took the debate? Who do you think came out on top in Kentucky? Will it shift the polls? Again, who's winning you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Todd Purdom, national editor at Vanity Fair. Todd Purdom, welcome back to On Point.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Also from Washington, Bob Cusack joins us, managing editor at The Hill. Bob, welcome back to you as well.
Hey, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Todd, and Bob.
Everybody knew what the stakes were. Paul Ryan poked right at it. Here he is last night talking about Vice President Biden and his duress he must be under after last week's Romney-Obama debate.
Mr. Vice President, I know you're under a lot of duress to make up for lost ground. But I think people will be better served if we don't keep interrupting each other.
Well, don't take all the 4 minutes then.
Okay, a canned poke and maybe a little bit too much laughter. But, Bob, what about that debate last night? There was so much anticipation after President Obama's kind of no-show in Denver. What did you see on that stage?
Tom, I think Joe Biden did a pretty good job. He needed to stem the momentum that Romney had captured after last week's debate. And it's debatable who won. I think Biden probably got a slight edge. He certainly won the debate on the stimulus, calling out Paul Ryan on seeking stimulus money, though being critical of the program. But Ryan had his moments as well. And I don't think this changed many votes. But going into the Sunday political shows, the Biden-Obama ticket was able to stem that momentum. And I think that was the most important thing. But, of course, the big debate is going to be next Tuesday night when Obama is going to have to come back after his disappointing performance.
What do you say, Todd? Did Joe Biden put a cork in the bottle of Mitt Romney's new magic after the debate last week?
I don't know if he put a cork in the bottle, but he might have taken some of the fizz out of the drink. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Bob is right that the challenge for the Democrats was to revert back to normal before Denver and stop a forward march of something that would have been a rout for Biden. And that clearly was not a rout for Biden. And all eyes will be on Hofstra next Tuesday and the president and Governor Romney, their rematch.
Jack, a lot of complaints from GOP circles this morning about that big Joe Biden grin up there on the split screen as Paul Ryan was making his case. And we heard the big laugh there when the duress card got played by Ryan. What about the demeanor of the vice president, Jack, in this debate?
Well, I think that the vice president's demeanor, I can't imagine it went over well with independent voters, undecided voters, and I think there's some confirmation of that. But that wasn't his audience. Before the debate, the Times' poll watcher, Nate Silver, wrote that the greatest threat to Obama's winning another term is the enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans. Republicans, especially after that smashing Romney performance, are way up, Democrats way down. And I think everything Joe Biden said, and even the gesticulations and the compensatory animation and the grimaces, I think all of that was aimed at somehow at sustaining Democratic enthusiasm. And he probably did that.
Compensatory animation. I mean, Todd, there is in part just a contest here of who can fan their feathers most brilliantly, right? We can all talk about policy points and they matter, but Romney just had a bigger display last week. Does Biden even the scales on that front of kind of how puffed is your chest, sir?
Well, I think the interesting thing is Biden was really just being Biden. And I don't subscribe to this comparison with Al Gore in 2000 when he audibly sighed in his debate with President Bush and seemed sort of condescending and supercilious and, you know, superior. I think Biden was, you know, hyper in a way last night, but it was just a hyper version of his normal self. So no one could say he wasn't authentic. That is the Biden you would see in any setting. God love you, Joey, as he would say.
Let's get down to it. In the debate last night, Paul Ryan attacked the Obama administration for not providing enough security to the U.S. consulate in Libya, where the American ambassador to Libya died. This was in Benghazi, of course, even though he said requests had been made for more security forces.
What we should not be doing is rejecting claims for calls for more security in our barracks, in our Marine. We need Marines in Benghazi when the commander on the ground says we need more forces for security. There were requests for extra security. Those requests were not honored.
Joe Biden said, hey, we weren't told that. We weren't told. Here he is.
We weren't told they wanted more security again. We did not know they wanted more security again. And by the way, at the time, we were told exactly, we said exactly what the intelligence community told us that they knew. That was the assessment. And as the intelligence community changed their view, we made it clear they changed their view.
And he went further to say Governor Romney, by criticizing the administration while events were still unfolding before the death of the ambassador was even known, was not the way to go. Biden.
Usually when there's a crisis, we pull together. We pulled together as a nation. But as I said, even before we knew what happened to the ambassador, the governor was holding a press conference. That's not presidential leadership.
Bob Cusack, Martha Raddatz of ABC, and God bless her, a sort of journalism moderation redeemed last night. I don't know if it's perfect, but it was sure a lot better than what we saw a week ago. A lot better. She went straight at this issue, and the administration appears to have vulnerability here. Bob, how did the vice president do?
I think he did okay, but the administration is struggling on this. They have not gotten their story straight, and when a politician stresses how he or she's been clear, they usually have been anything but. And the administration has not been clear. At first, they blamed the anti-Islam film. Then they backed away from that. News reports at the time were suggesting it was a terrorist attack, while the White House was suggesting it was not, that it was spontaneous, and then the White House changed its tune on that, and we've seen a little bit of finger-pointing between the State Department and the rest of the administration here. So I think Biden did as well as he could, but this is an area of vulnerability because it's kind of puzzling of how the administration has handled this whole controversy and this deadly attack.
Todd, what'd you think of how Joe Biden skated through or passed or around that last night?
Well, I thought Martha really put her finger on the question by saying, wasn't this a colossal intelligence failure? And because clearly it was in the front end, mm-hmm. in anticipating the attack, and then on the back end, figuring out what had happened, and the intelligence was clearly slow to come. It was a little hard to understand why Vice President Biden was so dismissive last night on the same day that State Department officials, security officials, had testified on the Hill that indeed they had asked for more security and had been rejected in that request. Perhaps by we, maybe he meant it didn't rise to the level of the president and the vice president and the White House itself, but clearly someplace in the government, somebody seems to have considered and rejected a request for more security. On the other hand, Congressman Ryan showed a certain ignorance when he talked about having Marines. Marines don't guard consulates, they guard embassies. Mm. A lot of military reporters pointed that out last night in the aftermath of the debate. So, you know, you could say they tangled on it. But clearly the Republicans are not going to let this go.
And Joe Biden pointing out, Congressman Ryan, you voted to cut, what was it, $300 million or something like that from diplomatic security around the world. Jack, do you see an intelligence failure here on the front end, obviously, but on the back end, an intelligence failure? They were getting the wrong idea about what had happened from intel, or playing politics with bad news?
I think the latter. I think the evidence points that way. Of course, we don't know what the intelligence people were telling them. But, you know, right along, I've just been so skeptical of this story that Ambassador Rice presented weeks ago, that, you know, this full-scale attack came out of a
protest turned into an attack. Now we see they were looking at the video right away and saw these armed men pouring in.
That's right. And they actually had some voice communication from the consulate saying exactly what was happening. And earlier that evening, the ambassador had been outside, escorting guests outside, and there'd been no demonstration there. This is a very bad show, I think.
Jack, we've got listener feedback pouring in from Swing State, Ohio. Let's get it right here from Ted in Cleveland. Ted, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks for letting me speak. So I was switching back and forth between my Yankees losing last night and the and the debate. And I found it very refreshing the way that Biden approached this. And I think that if Obama had had a fifth to a quarter of that energy last week, we wouldn't be talking about him getting destroyed. And my point that I'd like to ask your folks to talk about is this notion that Ryan and the rest of his cronies talk about hating government, you know, shrinking government, but Biden pointed out that he sent him letters asking for money. And when he pointed that out to Ryan, he was squirmish, I mean, like a child. And I find it really interesting that when those things are brought to the forefront, Ryan manages to kind of circumvent it. But the fact is...
Yeah, we've got a break coming right here. But point made, on the stimulus side, Paul Ryan was asking for some of that money. He said constituent services last night when called on it by Joe Biden. But Bob, you know, Ted's big point is if President Obama had had a fraction of that fight that Biden showed last night, all this might not have been turned around the way it has, but it has turned around. Was this enough with Joe up there last night, Bob, to really change the chemistry of what Mitt Romney wrought last week?
It was a start for the Democrats, but it's not enough. It's going to have to be finished by President Obama, and he needs to show more energy. He was lacking in that. Joe Biden had that, and that's why Democratic activists are very happy this morning.
Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Joe Biden and Paul Ryan debate in Kentucky. U.S. troops deployed to Jordan. Lance Armstrong and doping. Todd Purdom of Vanity Fair is with us. Bob Cusack from The Hill in Washington's here. And Jack Beatty. You know, we've been looking at Benghazi and was there enough security there or not? Obviously not in the end, though I don't know what it would have taken. Joe Biden tried to take it up a little higher. There was a big back and forth over Iran as well. But the question he asked more than once, as I recall, was whether Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, with their tough posturing, want to take the country to war. Here's Biden with little Ryan in here, too.
You're going to go to war? Is that what you want to do now?
We want to prevent war.
The interesting thing is how they're going to prevent war. How are they going to prevent war? They say there's nothing more that they say we should do than what we've already done.
Okay, here we are. Todd Purdom, they're talking about Iran here. Paul Ryan saying, look, Iran has just come closer and closer to a bomb. You needed Congress to push you into these tough sanctions. You didn't take the lead yourself, and you're not getting the job done. We would be tougher. Joe Biden turning around saying, what do you want? Do you want a war? He said it about Syria as well, I believe. What about that line? Does that look like the stakes to the American voting public, Todd?
I think it's a hard case for Congressman Ryan to make that the Republicans would be tougher. The truth is there's only so much anyone can do, and President Obama has made it abundantly clear that he does not intend to let Iran get a nuclear weapon. Just how we're going to keep them from doing that remains an open question for both the United States and Israel, of course. And now Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that, you know, his red line is a little bit further into the future. But I don't think there's really any credible suggestion that this administration is asleep at the switch when it comes to that question, and it's mostly a matter of politics that the Republicans are trying to play here.
Bob, how about it? On foreign policy, we'll bring it home, but on foreign policy, the Romney line has been this administration has apologized. It's been a weak America that's presented. Joe Biden turning around saying, what do you want? Do you want war? Effective?
I think, yes, to some degree. I mean, the Romney-Ryan ticket has basically endorsed the timeline of getting out of Afghanistan at the end of 2014, which is the same policy that the Obama administration has. There have been a lot of Jewish voters who have been upset with that Obama has not taken a little harder line on Iran and has had a frosty relationship with Netanyahu. But you know, Joe Biden was saying last night, well, let's calm down. These sanctions are working. I think Republicans are going to seize on that let's calm down on Iran line. But at the same time, there is evidence by recent news reports that suggests the sanctions are working. But how much time do we have before they get the bomb? That's the open question.
Jack, foreign policy, we'll bring it home. But when Joe Biden asks, what do you want? Do you want war? Does that deflate the Romney? We've got to stand taller and tougher or not?
I think it's kind of demagogic myself. I mean, I haven't heard war, any more war drums, louder war drums from the Romney camp than from the Obama. You know, neither candidate responded to Bob Gates's quotation that Martha Raddatz presented, which was a war with Iran would be a catastrophe for the United States. And, you know, next to that, what does a missile capability or sort of larval capability for Iran Iran with a weapon. How do you balance those things? Mr. Ryan said, having close to a nuclear weapon, that's far worse than a catastrophe for the United States. Neither one responded to that, and you could just see the cloud of war over the future, no matter who wins, growing darker.
Let's go to Martha in Hanover, New Hampshire. Martha, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
I'd like to comment on the character of the debate, mm-hmm. comparing last night's debate with the previous one with Jim Lehrer. Certainly last night we were very fortunate to have Martha Raddatz, who knew exactly what was going on.
Amen.
With the answers that were coming, and was able to push the candidates to fill out their answers and go beyond the sound bites. And I think this made the voters much more informed, as it does you news people. And I can see it this morning in the discussion that you're talking about the issues rather than other things about the debate.
Martha, I'm right with you there on Martha Raddatz. She was sharp. She kept it from sprawling all over the place. She had her hand on the steering wheel, but also gave them plenty of room to run. Bob, this looked like a real step up in moderation to my eye from a week ago.
I think so. I mean, there was some on Twitter, some conservatives were getting upset with Martha Raddatz, but I think that she enforced the time limits better than Jim Lehrer. And at the same time, when it got a little feisty, she told both men to calm down, that she was in control of the debate, and I think she did a fairly good job.
Here was Vice President, Joe Biden, he was blasting Mitt Romney. He called out the 47% comments that were caught on videotape that President Obama did not mention in Denver. And Paul Ryan came back right back saying, you know, sometimes people misspeak, including you, Mr. Vice President. Here we go.
And with respect to that quote, I think the Vice President very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way.
But I always say what I mean.
Yeah.
And so does Romney.
I always say what I mean, and so does Romney. That last little tweak there from the vice president, I guess Todd meaning to say he meant that 47% of Americans are moochers.
Yes, I think it was a kind of effective way of saying, look, I know what it's like to say something that is impolitic, but I say it because I actually believe it. And I think he probably got it. The reason that 47% remark got such traction, I think, is because it did seem to sum up something essential about what Governor Romney, or at least a big segment of the Republican Party as it's now constituted, believes. And that's why it had traction and why it had legs. It didn't seem like a slip of the tongue. It seemed like a revealing insight into his true thinking.
A big back and forth on taxes and what they would cost and how they can be cut and still go try and bring the deficit down. Here was Paul Ryan and Joe Biden going back and forth.
You can cut tax rates by 20%. And still preserve these important preferences for middle-class taxpayers.
Not mathematically possible.
It is mathematically possible. It's been done before. It's precisely what we're proposing.
It has never been done before.
It's been done a couple of times, actually.
It has never been
Jack
done
Kennedy
before.
Lowered tax rates, increased growth. Ronald Reagan.
Now you're Jack Kennedy.
Ronald Reagan.
Now you're Jack Kennedy, looking for a little bit of that Lloyd Benson magic there. I don't know if he really got it, Jack, but this issue of where the Romney tax cuts would really fall. President Obama got kind of tangled up in the $5 trillion. Joe Biden took it to a more general level and, you know, said the math doesn't work, but it just won't work. It's going to end up on the middle class. Who won? This is Paul Ryan's turf, Jack.
Yes, but I think the facts were with Joe Biden here. Yesterday, Lawrence Summers gave a briefing on this question of the studies, you know, the six studies that presumably bear out, according to the Ryan Romney people, that bear out their contention that this could be paid for, these tax cuts, by essentially just eliminating deductions for the richest Americans. And Summers made mincemeat of all of the studies. Either two of them were Wall Street Journal editorials, hardly count as studies. And the other studies had either one thing or another thing wrong with them that didn't square up with the claims being made for them. And Summers said, you know, usually challengers overstate things to the tune of billions. He says, this is the first time I've heard a challenger make claims larger than they can deliver to the tune of trillions. So I just don't think there's any question that, you know, we can pay for this by a eliminating deductions just for the wealthy. That's arithmetic. They can't.
It's going to be really interesting to see how that issue resurfaces in the presidential debates. Mitt Romney, of course, and Barack Obama with two more to go. Biden last night saying, look, there's a big picture here about what fell on us as he and President Obama came into office, and pointing to votes that preceded that moment, including votes by his own votes and, in contrast, Paul Ryan's.
They talk about this great recession, if it fell out of the sky, like, oh my goodness, where did it come from? It came from this man voting to put two wars in a credit card, to at the same time put a prescription drug benefit in the credit card, a $1 trillion tax cut for very wealthy. I was there. I voted against them. I said, no, we can't afford that.
I was there, Joe Biden pulling out that card, both on Capitol Hill and in the White House with President Reagan and Tip O'Neill. A little contrast in age and experience there, though. Ryan hung in. John in Cookeville, Tennessee. John, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. As an Obama supporter, you like to see, you know, people leaning your way as far as their questions and all that. But one thing that I'm starting to pick up on that's swaying my decision is a lot of the attacks that come at the Obama plan, it's almost like a fighter is just blocking the jabs but never throwing any punches. You know, they keep coming up with things saying, well, it wasn't a terrorist attack. It was because of this movie. And then when they find out that it is, it takes them a couple weeks to get it out, saying that they knew this, that or the other. They keep, you know, whenever they keep getting caught, and I can't defend that. Whenever people know, you know, it's almost like they're talking to me like I'm an idiot. You know, if you're wrong, then say you're wrong and you don't have to run from it. But whenever you know, and I want them to be right. You know what I mean? And that's the hardest part. But I can't have an arguing point whenever I know the truth. You know, even you know, whenever I look back at, as far as the gun deal, you know, the fast, you know, that, I mean, that if the Obama campaign, you know, the whole deal there, if they don't know what's going on in their State Department and all of them saying one thing and then they come back and change
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And they expect me to be, you know, they expect me to be naive enough to take both sides when they change their story and don't.
Yeah, John, we've got it. That seed of skepticism planted there, and we hear you wrestling with it. Facts are facts, they say, but facts are also slippery, we know. Appreciate your call. Owley in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Owley, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, talking about honesty, one thing that really struck me in the debate last night was the level of honesty. I feel that Joe Biden was and is honest about what he's saying, whereas Paul Ryan seemed very rehearsed in his answers. And he did not come off as honest in his answers when it came to abortion, when it came to taxation, or how the Romney-Ryan budget is going to work.
Well, we'll look at abortion. I mean, there's taxation. Todd, here is Paul Ryan. His reputation on Capitol Hill was made by saying, kind of, we can't stay with the New Deal formula that Joe Biden is very committed to and showed his commitment to again last night. Here's Paul Ryan. He may not sound honest to this listener, but, you know, to sympathetic ears, he's going to look like a younger man trying to make a different future, trying to change what he sees as an unsustainable course, Todd.
Well, yes, clearly that's why the Republicans picked him. It's why Governor Romney picked him in the first place. He's seen as kind of the intellectual energy of the party on the Hill. He did get badly dinged in Tampa in his acceptance speech for stretching the facts more than yeah. would be typical in that kind of a setting. And I don't think his answer on abortion last night would you could say it was not honest. I think that was pretty passionate and heartfelt. You might say it wasn't the kind of answer that would go over well in a pluralistic society. But it certainly was sincere. I think he's at pains to explain how the tax plan would work. Because if Governor Romney says he's going to cut marginal rates, preserve mm-hmm. the progressivity, in other words, don't give the rich any more breaks, and eliminate deductions without saying exactly which ones, I think the consensus is you could do two of those three things, but you simply can't do all three.
Here's a moment where Joe Biden attacked Mitt Romney for comments he made at that closed fundraiser, said 47% of the country needed to take more personal responsibility. Biden did not let that one go here.
My friend recently in a speech in Washington said 30% of the American people are takers. These people are my mom and dad, the people I grew up with, my neighbors. They pay more effective tax than Governor Romney pays in his federal income tax. They are elderly people who, in fact, are living off of Social Security. They are veterans and people fighting in Afghanistan right now who are, quote, not paying any taxes. I've had it up to here with this notion that 47%, it's about time they take some responsibility here.
Jack, what about this battle over, you know, who's being real and who's being forthright in terms of this nation's finances and what it's going to do for its citizens?
Well, you know, the 47% remark, Governor Romney now concedes that was he was just wrong. He doesn't say how he was wrong, numerically, morally, politically, he was wrong. So we wipe the Etch-a-Sketch is applied to that. I am sort of amazed that the president of the United States didn't bring this up in his debate, because this was such a revelatory moment. Now, Mr. Romney at one point said, I didn't mean to say that these 47% were shiftless. All I meant to say was they weren't likely Republican voters. But that's not what he said in that too candid moment. And so if it's all about a battle for the middle class, it's very hard to see how the Republicans then turn to half the country and say, look, we didn't really mean it. We really think you're self-sufficient or trying to be, and we want to help you. That's a stretch. But on the other hand, I think Mitt Romney a week ago essentially did erase that. I mean, with the president's help, and he shifted the axis of this race. It is now about leadership. He showed that he was a strong leader. The president looked weak. That is so damaging for the president.
Well, I mean, that was the body language last week. It's going to be really interesting to see how it unfolds in those debates to come. If leadership is partly consistency, that became an issue this week. We had a back and forth with Mitt Romney on abortion. Here he was. This was in Iowa with the Des Moines Register on Tuesday, asked by a reporter, do you intend to pursue any legislation specifically regarding abortion? It came up again last night, but here was Romney on Tuesday.
There's no legislation with regards to abortion that I'm familiar with that would become part of my agenda.
Nothing to do with abortion. Then, the next day, kind of the walk back, Delaware, Iowa, Romney answered charges that he had flip-flopped on abortion.
I think I've said time and again, I'm a pro-life candidate. I'll be a pro-life president. The actions I'll take immediately are to remove funding for Planned Parenthood.
And then President Obama weighing in on this one. ABC's with ABC's Diane Sawyer saying that Romney would work to overturn Roe v. Wade.
I mean, Governor Romney has made very clear that if a bill comes to his desk that overturns Roe v. Wade, that he will be fully supportive of that. And he said, I will appoint justices that will overturn Roe v. Wade. And now, 4 weeks before an election, he is trying to cloud the question when it comes to women's rights to control their own health care decisions.
Todd, what do you make of this back and forth this week on the Romney front on abortion?
Well, it's revealing because his first answer is again, what he really believes, which is he's not particularly familiar with this issue. It's not front and center in his mind. So when he says there's no particular legislative agenda that would be part of my initiative, that's what he means. But, of course, there is pending legislation, or there's legislation that's floating around out there, including some sponsored by Congressman Ryan.
Very strong legislation, yeah.
Yes. And so he's just it's a window into the relative place of this issue in his consciousness, which is fairly low. It's not something that drives him. And, of course, the Republican base, it is something that drives them. And the walk back was reflective of that.
Jack, we heard Bill Clinton talking this week about the changeable Romney. Do you expect Barack Obama to go at that next week, their next debate?
I don't think so, because I think the voters want that. In other words, I think there's a segment of the voters that like pure pragmatism. I'll do whatever works. Leave consistency out of it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, former Penn State assistant coach and convicted child abuser Jerry Sandusky sentenced to spend, in effect, the rest of his life in prison. Here's lead prosecutor Joe McGettigan.
He displayed deviance, narcissism, a lack of feeling for the pain he caused others, and to the end, an unwillingness to accept responsibility.
The meningitis outbreak from Dirty Drugs claims a 14th life and sickens 170 nationwide. George Carey of Howell, Michigan, lost his wife, Lillian, to the bad injections, which he also has been given.
I am continuing to monitor my health during this difficult time. My family is horrified at the thought that they could lose both of their parents in this preventable outbreak.
And 14-year-old Malala Yousafzai, who campaigned for girls' education in Pakistan, shot in the head by assailants from the Taliban. Last year, in an interview with CNN, she said girls needed to speak out for justice.
God will ask you on the day of judgment that where were you when your people were asking you, when your school fellows were asking you, and when your school was asking you that I am being blown up. When your people need you, you should come up, you should come, and you should stand up for their rights.
A tough, terrible story. She's still hanging in there. We're looking at a week in the news. Joe Biden and Paul Ryan debate in Kentucky. U.S. troops, some deployed to Jordan, Lance Armstrong, and doping. Todd Purdom is with us from Vanity Fair. Bob Cusack, managing editor at The Hill, and our own Jack Beattie. Let's go to Tracy in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Tracy, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Good. Tom, first I'd like to say I just adore your program. I don't know what I would do without
your program.
You're very
kind. What are you thinking?
Really? Well, I'm calling just to say, to put my voice in, that I thought that Biden did an excellent job last night at defining the differences in the policy. And I was particularly happy that he brought up on several occasions the party's contrast on taxation. And I, as a homeowner, am particularly concerned about the Romney's Ryan and Romney possibly taking away the benefit I receive at the end of the year as a homeowner.
The deduction for mortgage interest payments, and that was front and center last night. Of course, Paul Ryan did not concede that that would be taken away from middle-class homeowners.
He did not concede, but he was infirm about it, and I am concerned that may be on the table. And for me, that's a $3,000 in my pocket each year, and I think that it would affect many middle-class individuals, and it's a very important issue for me.
Yeah, Tracy, got your attention right there. Let us pick it up. I mean, Todd Purdom, this is really interesting. You know, we have finances that are unsustainable. There needs to be change. Everybody said so last night, but Joe Biden was kind of defending the full boat of benefits. Paul Ryan, much more than Mitt Romney, willing to say, no, they're going to have to be cuts. But even he couldn't come out with the specifics. Now, we've got two debates to go, and this thing is really getting close. Can Romney and Ryan hold out to the very end, all the way through Election Day, Todd, on what the specifics of their tax plan would be? Joe Biden went at that last night. Or are they going to have to lay some out there? Why not lay some out and put a voter like Tracy's mind at ease if they can?
Well, if they lay some out, they'll be picked apart. And I think they fear at this point that, you know, the less said, the better. But the mortgage interest deduction is one of those central things of the American dream. Like George Bailey's father said to him in It's a Wonderful Life, it's deep in the race for a man to want his own house and four walls and roof over his head. And the fact is, the mortgage interest deduction has helped make that possible for many middle-class homeowners. So I don't know. I think, you know, in fairness to the Romney-Ryan campaign, the Obama campaign is almost as obscure about what it would do in the second term.
Jack, fair there? The same degree of opacity here?
I think so. I think it's fair. To me, the great gap in President Obama's convention speech was, what are you going to do in a second term? What are you going to do differently? The two questions, really. And I still don't hear the answer to that. And I think very effectively, Mr. Romney said, the status quo has brought us to this pass. If you like it, he's going to give you more of the status quo. I've got this new big idea of tax reform and change and so on. And, you know, voters don't pay attention to these policy details. One poll this week showed that only 11% of voters got it, that the Ryan budget would essentially cut the percentage of domestic spending, exclusive of Social Security and Medicare, in half. They didn't get that. Only 11% knew it, and they don't pay attention to that. And that's a shame. But Romney is exploiting that when he comes up. I've got a big idea, and it's new. And polls show people people were responding to that.
I mean, people want something new.
Yes,
it hasn't
yes.
been greatly. Something fresh would be nice. But on the other hand, Americans know it needs to work. I mean, Bob, there was a lot of eye rolling, and it wasn't Al Gore-style sighing, but Joe Biden with a lot of facial disbelief expressed last night. Do you think Americans are more drawn to Romney's kind of, you know, hey, I'll give you morning in America again, just give me the keys to the car, or to Biden saying, I'll defend what you've got, stick with me?
I think it remains to be seen as far as whether the candidates can get those voters in the middle. I think one of the things that had been said about 2 weeks ago is that, well, there are no undecided voters. Everyone has picked their favorite. How do you target those voters? I think that's wrong, and I think that's been shown in the polls after the Romney-Obama debate. A lot of people were leaning toward Obama, and then they're well, maybe I'll take a second look at Romney. Romney, though, certainly has not proven that he's a Reagan. I mean, he did very well in that first debate. His debate performance throughout the primary, Republican primary, was very uneven. Sometimes he was very strong, as he was in Florida after Newt Gingrich won South Carolina. Other times he made gaffes and offered that $10,000 bet to Rick Perry. So can Mitt Romney be consistent? Can he win the next one or perhaps both debates? That could be really the determinant of who is going to be president in 2013.
The whole thing and a lot riding on the president's performance here after last week. Mason City, Iowa. Andrew, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, sir. Yes, it seems to me like the Ryan Romney are playing the game that I remember they used to do on television. It was called To Tell the Truth. And what they would do is they'd interview various people who would say who they were. And then you had to figure out, well, who's the authentic person?
Yeah.
And then they would say at the climax, will the real so-and-so stand up? And it seems to me that Ryan and Romney are playing this game. It's confusing not only the Republicans, but all the people as to really what position do they really represent. And then I think about my case. I'm 84-year-old veteran,
and
wore the Air Force uniform for, as an active duty and also reservist for almost 30 years. And they're saying to me, you know, if you're over 55, your medical care is just fine. Well, hey, I'm concerned more not about mine, which is really taken care of, but I'm concerned about my children and my grandchildren. And the Romney Ryan would devastate our health care and everything else that they talk about.
But, Andrew, you've got some life experience. You're 84. You've got life experience. Paul Ryan says, look, we can't afford to keep going this way. And Joe Biden just won't admit it. But I'm younger, and I'm going to face it because we have to. We can't afford this. What do you say to that, Andrew?
Well, I would say this. It is certainly true that Romney and Ryan's, their solution, such as vouchers and their other proposals, will not work. And then we don't know for sure what Romney is going to offer us for leadership. We know the direction that our President Barack Obama is going to lead us, and he is going to strengthen the programs. They can be modified, but the Republicans are going to have to work together with the Democrats. They refuse to do so all during President Obama's leadership.
Andrew, we've got it. Listen, if you're 84 years old, whatever you're doing for your health, I want some of that. You sound like you could be about 30, and I'm really glad for your call. You're not the only one who's been thinking about where Mitt Romney comes down. I mean, Bill Clinton was talking in Las Vegas at a campaign rally out there this week for Senate candidate Shelley Berkley. Bill Clinton mocked Mitt Romney for having a more moderate stance during that first presidential debate than in the rest of his earlier campaign.
I had a different reaction to that first debate than a lot of people did. I mean, I thought, wow, here's old moderate Mitt. Where you been, boy? I miss you all these last 2 years.
Where you been, boy? Now, that is a phrase I don't think you're going to hear President Obama using next week in the debate. But Todd Purnham, how does the president come at this? He had that, you know, just absolutely panned performance. Now you see Joe Biden sort of all, you know, up high in his seat and coming on strong. And yet the president clearly did not have that as his director's guidance, whoever's giving him advice last time. How does he come at this? If Mitt Romney comes out with the same, you know, large and in charge kind of leader posture here, what does the president do?
Well, it's a real challenge for him, in part because the debate in the next format is going to be a town hall meeting, and both candidates will really be expected to answer the question actually posed by the audience member. And it gets a lot harder to thrust and parry with your opponent in that setting or to roll over a moderator. You have to show a certain amount of respect to your questioner who's a, you know, quote-unquote real person. So I think the president has to proceed with kind of firmness of purpose and calmness of mind, and he should look, you know, engaged but not too hot, bemused but not contemptuous. It's a complicated dance for himself, and he made it much more complicated by that first performance.
Jack, how do you see the president's challenge now post-Biden-Ryan?
Well, I think he identified it when he condemned Romney's start turn. He said what was being presented wasn't leadership, that's salesmanship. But as Maureen Dowd pointed out, salesmanship, that's the president's job. I mean, you know, that's what he's
there
for.
Sell an agenda. Get it through.
Sell the agenda. I mean, to complain that Romney was dealing in salesmanship, that's the job description, Mr. Obama.
So how does he do that in the face of that, you know, smile and a shoe shine and more Mitt Romney?
I think he's got to show some emotional connection to these issues. I mean, he was so far back, so deanimated, professorial. He's got to show something of what Biden showed, which is, look, I'm on your side, middle class. This is my life. This is who I am. This guy, this fellow Romney, look at the world he's from. Do you really think he cares about you? I think the president has got to make some of that, show a little, empathy.
We'll see it. We'll see, and see soon enough. It's coming right up, of course. Let's get a call here from Savannah, Georgia. Neil, thanks for calling. Neil, you're on.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I thought the vice president last night did a very good job of seizing on the sort of details-to-follow nature of most of the Ryan-Romney policies, particularly the tax cuts and the increases in defense spending. When he was pressed for details, he couldn't provide them. The moderator even had to say, you know, so you have no specifics. And I think that's really important to people. I think they need to hear that. You know, there was even a caller earlier who was worried about her mortgage section. And to suggest that, you know, somehow bipartisan agreements to make this thing deficit neutral will be worked out in the legislature, I just don't buy that.
So there we are. You know, on the Pentagon, it was interesting, Bob, because Mitt Romney was very forthright last week in saying, yes, I want to spend more on this because it's all about the prime directive is national security. Paul Ryan was not buying the depiction of their intended spending that Joe Biden put out there, Bob.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a campaign issue, whether you know, how are you going to pay for anything, whether it's defense spending, how are you going to spell out your tax reform plan, how are you going to pay for it, all these things. And I agree that, you know, to some point, you have to be vague on this, because if you lay it out too specifically, then you're going to be attacked in campaign ads. And I agree with Todd, too, because both campaigns here have not really spelled out exactly what they would do in a second term. But the sequester is something that Republicans are going on the offense on. And some Democrats kind of suggest that Obama should kind of embrace a plan to avert those defense cuts, because they're not popular in states, the battleground states like Virginia and Ohio.
Of course, Republicans and Democrats voted for them, and that did come out some last night. I want to pivot on this Pentagon point a little more widely. I mean, this week we saw some really incredible back and forth between Syria and Turkey. Flight brought down by forced down by Turks, who said that they found Russian ammunition and more on it. We had the shelling back and forth the week before, and the news that we've got American troops in Jordan, right across the border from Syria, just what is 30 miles in or something. Here's Leon Panetta on American troops to Jordan.
The reason we have a group of our forces there, they're working to help them build a headquarters there and to ensure that we make the relationship between the United States and Jordan a strong one, so that we can deal with all of the possible consequences of what's happening in Syria.
Jack Beatty, that last phrase, deal with all the possible consequences of what's happening in Syria, as Joe Biden said last night, well, those up to and including regional war. What do you make of this U.S., I don't know if it's a footprint yet, but toe print at least next door in Jordan, real troops right next door?
truly 150 small, but to deal with all contingencies. Now, by the end of the year, it's estimated there are going to be 700,000 refugees from that conflict spilled out over all these borders, including Jordan. And obviously, there's going to be the logistic issues there are immense. The Americans can help with that, but I suspect they're really there to keep an eye on the you know, the chemical weapons that Mr. Assad has, and that has been our red line all along. You know, if he does anything with them, uses them, moves them, we're going to act. But it's we're closer now than we've been. And also this week, Mr. Romney said, let's be more active in arming the rebels. And he didn't. He said, you know, we have to be sure we got the right rebels. But that is a big problem. And I thought Paul Ryan made a very good point last night, which is, look, the longer this thing goes on, the larger the role Al Qaeda is playing in Syria. That's just clear. Now, does that mean we have to stop this? No, but that shows you how these dynamics, just of the of keeping the war going, can hurt U.S. interests.
You may not want to get in, but staying out has its consequences as well. And we could see everybody wrestling with that a bit last night. Got that story of the Taliban killing young Malala in Pakistan. We'll look more at that next week. And Lance Armstrong, gosh, Todd Purdom, kind of incredible. After all those times, we cheered him up the Champs-Élysées. He's winning, you know, all the great bicycling races all over the place. And we're told a gigantic doping trail around him. Of course, his people deny it. But it doesn't look good, Todd, for this athletic hero of the United States.
No, the stunning part is not just that he was doping, but that he was the alleged mastermind of a, you know, kind of fiendish doping ring, and that's how he covered his tracks. And I think that really is a kind of a devastating. We now see why he chose not to contest this investigation.
Yeah, well, live strong. I mean, we still want to do that, all those yellow bands, but let's try and do it without steroids. Todd Purdom, Vanity Fair, thank you so much for being with us today. Todd, great to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks so much.
And Jack, thanks as always.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.